Heart season preview. It's unbelievable. It's even here. I think we're going to be reaching here in the month of October now, which is fun. I am your co-host, Andrew Reich, joined by Adamer.
We are in October, and if timing serves correctly, I am in South America right now.
Oh, wait, are you at Oktoberfest?
No.
Or is that in Germany?
That's in Germany, but the funny thing is, last year I went to the Dublin Oktoberfest in Ireland. And
is that like the Dublin's version of Rammstein or something?
It was just hilarious. There's this German beer festival, and we're just in the middle of Dublin, and like, well, that makes sense to us, but... Yep, right now, if all timing is right, I am busy in the in the Andes. Just, I don't know what they have to drink down there, but whatever it is, I'm probably drinking.
Well, I don't know why you would be in Dublin, because you're here in the month of October as we talk about MVP.
Because we record it live to your ears. Anytime you hit play.
This is a live, like Facebook Live. You know what I don't like about that shit with Facebook Live? I get a notification. I know I can turn it off somehow, but you get a notification anytime someone is live on their Facebook, even if you're not tagged. Like, it's like, hey, this guy is live at his house. I don't fucking care, you know?
Yeah.
I don't know how to turn that off. I gotta figure that
Most
out.
Most of the time, they're just turned on by accident. Like, what does this button do? How do I turn it off?
Yeah,
live has ended. Like, ah.
Yeah, the feather is right, dummy. Please don't press live with your freaking camera, because I might see something I don't want to see.
But yeah, once you hit play, the bat signal goes off. We rush to our computers and bam, we are just hovered around our computers 24/7.
We are the beat generation. We are here live in the moment, reading you the poetry of NBA basketball as we speak. So are we the writers of our generation? Are we the podcasters of our NBA generation?
We are just vastly underrated of underrated, unheralded, and
where do you think we rank on NBA podcasts on iTunes?
Well, you know, I
think we're like a solid, like, in the top.
Oh, we're not NBA. We're a wrestling podcast, I assume. We just have basketball.
We are both from the South talking about basketball on a wrestling website.
And everything, just that's why, you know, why else am I?
Doesn't that all go together, sports and recreation?
It's just, we're just the miscellaneous part.
Mm-hmm. Oh, well, that will forever be miscellaneous. But you know what? That's how we roll. That's how we like it. And speaking of miscellaneous, let's talk about these NBA teams that are not going to win an NBA championship, shall we?
Let's.
Or did I just spoil it for us?
Hey, everybody is undefeated at this point of the season, so everybody has a chance. It's just some are on their way up, some are on their way down, some just made questionable moves. So,
you know, spring brings anew, like in baseball. Instead, it's autumn. Autumn brings anew.
Yeah.
What is the phrase? Something spring, something anew?
Spring forward, fall back.
No. That's in November this year. I'm talking about like the spring training thing that where they always say every team in baseball has a chance.
Baseball is Facebook post. Yeah, it's 40 days to pitchers and catchers. Oh yeah, well, somebody needs to get a life.
Who you like in October for the baseball? You like them Cubbies?
I like that team. That team with the most points, the ones who's winning.
Their runs.
I don't The Cubs would be the good storyline. As for not Cubs, I think Baltimore's in it. I don't even know who else is.
Even number year, so don't the Giants win the even numbered year like every single year, or are they even in it?
I know the Devil Rays are terrible.
Or are they just the Rays now? Did they take the Devil out?
The Tampa Bay Ray Romanos are terrible since their coach went to Chicago. And
all right, before we even tell people the teams, you and I already know the five teams. Can you see any of these five teams saying, hey, this team might win an NBA championship? Let's just leave it right there and start.
I see two teams that think they can, but no.
Okay. All right, well, let's go ahead and give away the title of our new show, our new segment, as we continue on with our previews. Now that we're in the top the top 13 actually now. We're talking about coulda, woulda, shoulda. You remember that phrase, being a Saints fan?
Yep.
Jim Mora, his little rant where the Saints in the 80s or the early 90s, they lost a game. And they're like, well, you know, if you had done this and if you had done that. And Jim Mora, yeah, well, coulda, woulda, shoulda. You know, and I feel like the same way with this team, where people want to like them, the media gives them a little bit more of a bump, and then there's just that little part of you that wants to kind of rebel and say, yeah, well, coulda, woulda, shoulda. These teams should have been better. They could have been better. They would have done it had they not gotten a bad break. But guess what? They're not winning an NBA championship. It's almost like, you know how we talked about how Nab Butt is sort of like a purgatory? Well, coulda, woulda, shoulda is sort of like the good team purgatory.
Yeah, that's just the perennial sixth seed. We just want the playoff money. We can't contend. We know we can't contend. The thing is, this is, I think, the group we have the most issues on of placing them here, because there's a lot, like, you know, with Houston and
I tried to put Charlotte in here, but you weren't having it.
There was a lot of lobbying here and a lot of like, well, could this team beat that team? Well, how, you know, Washington.
It is an election year.
Washington, Miami, Houston. Well, they're how come they're in here and they're in that list and this team's in this list? This isn't far from the previous one. There's a lot of gray area here, and you need, for every team to fall to one side, you need another team to fall to the other side. And these are sort of the ones we gave the benefit to. Like, you know, I think they'll do a little better than
Houston. We know
they're
going to be pretty good. We know they're going to be pretty good. Like, what's the baseline here? Like 48 wins or maybe less than that?
Well, 44, 45. Because the other group's around 42-ish.
Mm-hmm. Now, we talked about this with God of Pulse, which was last week, that we have a feeling that some of those teams are going to go above 42 wins. I said it's probably going to be Washington or Dallas. You'd say it's definitely going to be Utah. And I said Houston might be a dark horse. With these teams, we know they're going to be in the win column more often than in the loss column. If they're not, then it would legitimately surprise me.
These are the 5 and 6 seed, the solid 5 and 6, and you know, how does one become the 5 seed? Well, it's because you had that great last week and you beat that. You know, you finished the last 10 going 7-3. The other team went 5-5. You got those extra 2 games, you pulled it off.
And you can't separate this by spending. Well, these are the teams that spent, but they're not as good as they think they are. That's why they're not in the, you know, the God of Pulse section, where those teams didn't. No. All the teams spent money for the most part. The difference here is that some of these teams that we're going to talk about, what coulda, woulda, shoulda, they really went out of their way with big splash signings, which always get the most attention. They're the ones that perk the ears up of the NBA writers and the casual fans, and they look at it and say, oh, well, Joakim Noah's in New York with Derrick Rose, and oh, Dwight Howard's in Atlanta, Dwayne Wade is in Chicago. Let's see how this goes, you know?
This is the sizzle. These are the ones that get the media attention, as opposed to the Utahs and Detroits. We're like, eh, whatever.
Yeah, this is a bit of a splashier one, which made it a little harder to debate, because you and I, we like to like get away from splash. Now the movie Splash is a good movie, but but we try to avoid like the overtaking of overhype. We try to, you know, where, you know, you have to get that out of the way once the season begins, and you look at it fairly impartially and say, okay, how good is this team really? So we're going to put a lot of the little bit of the hype in there with a couple other teams that might not have as much hype. But let's go ahead and get started. Let's talk about the Atlanta Hawks, who I kind of gave away with the Dwight Howard signing. That was the kind of the centerpiece of their free agency. They were able to get Dwight Howard. They re-signed Kent Bazemore to pretty decent money. Do you feel like Kent Bazemore was overpaid?
Overpaid.
How much? It's at $17 million or $18 million or something?
It's one of those, like, well, he can develop. And the problem with this team is, you know, you signed Dwight Howard before you had a final word on Horford. Mm-hmm. It was the, you know, we made the step way a little too soon. We didn't, oh, they could both play together.
The big problem with, and you already know this being the Celtics fan, having kind of your ear to the wall, is that the biggest hang up with Horford was that Atlanta did not want to give him that fifth year at, at the age that he was at. I think he's 30 years old. Am I right?
Mm-hmm.
And they did not want to give him that, that fifth year with a player option. They wanted to give him 4. Well, they at the very end, the rumor is that they were going to give him the fifth year, but it was too late. Horford had already made his mind that he was leaving. So he was either going to go to Washington or he was going to go to Boston. He chose to go to Boston.
Yeah, that was the you know, like with Dwayne Wade, just a little bit too late. You know, you want to show some love. I've been the guy here from day one. I have, you know, I'm
all-star.
I'm the lone holdout from that group of him, Josh Smith, and who was the third one?
Joe Johnson?
Joe Johnson. Yeah, he was the last one in. He was the, you know, an original.
Marvin Williams was on that team. Mm-hmm.
And then all of a sudden, you know, this team, I don't like this team.
Did you like the Hawks when they had Millsap and Teague and Horford and Korver?
I thought they were overrated, and I said they were going to be exposed in the playoffs 2 years ago, and oh, they got exposed. Well, no, they're shooting. Like, yeah, but they don't have any depth. They're just one. And just the problem with having Budenholzer as your GM and coach, he's been making very bad decisions.
Yeah, Danny Ferry is now actually in New Orleans. He's an assistant GM under Dell Demps. Oh, by the way, I know this is totally unrelated. Did you see Monty Williams got the VP job with the Spurs?
Yeah, it's very odd.
Strange. I've never seen a guy who had been a fired head coach who became a good assistant coach get a VP job. Very strange. I didn't understand that. Unless it's just a lateral move so that they could bring him in as an assistant coach.
Yeah, it's probably just a title, you know.
Yeah, kind of like Ime Udoka or something like that. But anyways, the Hawks, you know, with Mike Budenholzer running the show, very different. You know, it felt like they kind of went a little splashier with this last one, like we were just talking about. Dwight Howard, $23 million per year. His contract comes up, I believe, in 2019. A good deal, though, right?
He's good. He is very good. He's a
solid double-double guy.
The problem is his attitude has always been shitty, and he's never gotten better. And, you know, usually when you get old,
offensive post play, even though he has back trouble.
Yeah, it's like, well, you're not giving enough touches. It's like, well, it showed in Houston. You were you got more than the average person. How many do you need? You need the ball every time? Well, yeah. And it's just like, well, you know, he hasn't gotten the team concept, you know, what, 13 years in the league now, 14?
Well, Stan tried. He tried in Orlando.
It was just then, you know, disastrous run in L.A., disastrous run in Houston. And now it's just like, well, this is, you know, as we see with talent, you know, for a level crazy, you need the talent to overcome it. That's why, like, Steven Jackson's out of the league because he has no talent anymore, and Dwight Howard's still getting paid. Well, yeah, because he's still very good. However, like we said with Budenholzer, let's shoot threes, let's run. Howard does neither.
Now, Dennis Schroeder is now the starting point guard. I know some people like Schroeder's potential. He's just as long as Jeff Teague, but defensively, I think he's got a little more potential. Teague really slipped defensively his last year in Atlanta. We'll talk about Teague a little later because he's on another team that we're going to talk about. But what do you think of Schroeder as sort of the star point guard? Do you think it can work?
Schroeder was good in limited minutes. That's the problem is, well, it's one of those, what, are you going to commit to him to being the young point guard of the future? Or it's one of the, you can't keep him to be your backup. You can't have two of those guys. So, you know, I have no problem with him being it. It's just, can he do this for 40 minutes? Kent Bazemore, he was great as the glue bench guy. Now that he's the starter and has to sort of be a focal role.
I'm sorry to interrupt. I got the idea about Kent Bazemore. They had let Damari Carroll go in free agency to Toronto. Not that letting Damari Carroll go like crippled the team. I guess they were just so they were so hell bent on keeping on not letting their small forward spot get vacated in free agency again that they overpaid to keep him.
Well, Korver pretty much did cripple them. Once he gone, there was a big hole and. Kyle Korver, he is – we now finally see
– This might be – do you think this is his last year as an NBA player, Kyle Korver?
I want to say yes, but I'm pretty sure Mike Miller still has a job, and his last year was 4 years ago.
Defensively, Kyle Korver is not terrible, but he's not J.J. Redick. Like, J.J. Redick defensively became a good – white boy / three-point specialist, you know, that kind of gets underrated as a defender. Korver's bad. You know, he's not the worst. You know, he's not.
He never was good. It's just now he's 35 or 36, and yeah, 35. He's not stopping anybody. And you're gonna you built your team on a 3-point shooting team, and Dwight Howard doesn't fit that mold. He is the definite. You know, he is just square peg round hole technology. And
Well, I will say this with Stan Van Gundy in Orlando, going back to kind of the younger days in Dwight, which is far different from the Dwight we have now, that he did make that work where he's surrounded with a lot of three-point shooters like Hedo Turkoglu and Rashard Lewis. And I remember they had Vince Carter taking a lot of threes and Jameer Nelson. Do you think they would be able to do that in Atlanta?
That's when you're younger and it doesn't matter because you're a center. You can go out. You have no problem chasing a ball 5 feet away. When you're older, you're just like, nope. I am not going to, you know, I'm picking and choosing my spots. There's a difference between a young, hungry...
I'll let Mike Scott go after that.
Mike Scott, go. Oh, Millsap, that's, but it was a three-point team with him in the middle, but he had no problem saying, I'm going to grab literally anything that goes in the paint. If it hits, if it's anywhere in the paint, I'm going to go after it. Now it's just like, nah, just pass it to me and I'll dribble backwards to the hoop and we're good.
Do you feel like the Horford departure was a me or him scenario between Horford and Millsap, or do you think there's potential that Millsap will leave after he opts out in the summer of 2017?
They're going to – I could see him leaving. I could also see Atlanta panicking to keep him because if he leaves, you literally –
He had a great year last year. A great year.
He had a great year. It's just you – you know, you put all your money in the starting lineup. You have your young pieces, Dennis Schroeder. Nene, you got rid of for Lou Williams, who you got rid of. All you have is the super developmental Walter Tavares. And you got Taurean Prince and DeAndre Bembry, who is now your guys you're looking for 4 years down the line. They're nowhere near it. You need another good 2 to 3 years out of this lineup.
Yeah, they re-sign Chris Humphries. They bring in Jared Jack, who is coming off of a really bad knee injury when he was in Brooklyn. I'm pretty sure he'll be ready to go, but I'm not sure what he'll be able to do. Tim Hardaway Jr., they're pretty close to giving up on him. Mike Muscala got a lot of blow for Atlanta down the stretch. But you just you have all those memories of them playing Cleveland and just getting destroyed. They got swept twice. And it wasn't that Cleveland is because Cleveland is an NBA championship team and they're great. It's because Atlanta just doesn't rise to the occasion. I remember they barely beat the Wizards the year that they had the 60-win team. And they, in order to get to the Eastern Conference Finals, they barely beat the Washington Wizards. They had to go six games with the Boston Celtics, who were not exactly a great team. And, you know, there are struggles there. And I don't know if mixing things around is going to really help much.
Nope, they're on the decline. They are on their way down, and you know, like I said, you gave Bazemore the money, but then you draft Taurean Prince and and Bembry. Well, one of those guys is going to have to come off the bench in a year or two, but now it's just we don't know what Schroeder can do with extended minutes. We don't know Howard can play with these guys because, like we said, the last two teams he was on, he didn't play well with others. So it's just a lot of questions. That's why I say I don't like them. It's just they're continuing their downward trend in that I don't want to say Howard was a panic signing because if they lost Horford and got nobody, they would have had Ian Mahimi. And it's just like, ugh.
So let me give you the coulda, woulda, shoulda of the Atlanta Hawks. How good could they be? More of a general question. With Dwight Howard there.
They could be a 3 seed. I think is their highest. They're either Boston or Toronto sort of falters. They could sneak into a 3.
Would they have been better if they had just kept Al Horford along with Paul Millsap? Like, is it a better fit?
I don't see much of a fit with Howard and Horford. I don't see much of a loss there. It's just Horford fit the system. Howard, I think, has more talent than Horford. He just doesn't fit. Would the money might have been a little spent trying to upgrade the Kyle Korver position? That's something that could have been looked into. It's just, okay, we lost Horford. We need somebody to replace him, period. So from a talent upgrade, yes. Headache upgrade, yes. It's just, is it going to be a fit?
Should they have traded Dennis Schroeder instead of Jeff Teague?
No, that's an either or. It's one of those, I think, 50-50. You could tell me they kept Teague, they traded Schroeder. Okay, I can see that. You have to keep your guy, and Schroeder's not going to get minutes, and you either lose him to restricted free agency for nothing, or you get something for him now, or just, you know, okay, Jeff Teague, we're, you know, giving the reins to the new guy.
let's talk about the Chicago Bulls as we stay in the Eastern Conference. We actually have four Eastern Conference teams and one Western Conference team. For the Chicago Bulls, just a really, really rough year last year.
Well, can we say we predicted it?
We did. They were 42-40, which isn't terrible, but if you look at yourself as a title contender like they did the previous year before they had fired Tom Thibodeau, you bring in Fred Hoiberg and you're thinking Steve Kerr. You're thinking, oh, we just need a new coach to kind of freshen things up with the same roster, and they'll react to it, and we'll have some kind of an improvement win total wise, and that might be enough to get us the home court advantage that we need to beat the Cleveland Cavaliers. Well, that blew up right.
Yeah, now. Hoiberg did not do good. They're like, you know, we really miss our old coach right now. Mm-hmm. He was good. Yeah, he treated us bad, but he was really good.
He overplayed. I mean, look, we talked about this with Minnesota. Like, Thibodeau's got his flaws. Like, he absolutely does. You know, his offenses are terrible. He always plays too big. When small ball is sort of the way to go now, and he overplayed guys. He overplayed his starters. You know, Fred Hoiberg tried to do things to kind of keep things a little fresh. You know, he tried to mix it up with Derrick Rose not playing as many minutes and trying to keep the load off of him. But they didn't have any backup point guards with Rose to kind of make it work. So it was just really bad vibes all around. Joakim Noah. There was rumors that he was going to be like a six man, and Noah didn't want to do that. Then he hurt his shoulder. Pau Gasol had a good statistical year, but he just seemed unhappy. Is that a good way of putting it?
Bobby Portis, every time he hit the court, everyone's like, wow, this kid looks like he could do something. Nope.
Yep.
To the end of the bench for you. And
Doug McDermott had a decent outing for like about a month in December or January, and then he kind of like went back to the bench, you know.
This team is – I'm just going to interrupt. This team is half panic, half luck.
Okay.
They panicked by getting Rondo. They said, we somehow got Wade. He signed with us. Well, we need somebody. We think we could contend. We could do it. We could do it. We could do it. He's going to pull up that Miami Magic.
Now you're scotching over big things. They signed Dwayne Wade and Rajon Rondo. Name-wise, that's huge. You know, but why do you have concerns?
Because I think in their minds, they're going to try to talk themselves up as they got, you know, Boston championship Rondo and Dwayne Wade 4 years ago, Miami.
Well, they want Dwayne Wade 2016. They want to see the super efficient veteran leader Dwayne Wade. That's what they want. The one they saw in Miami when he was bringing along Justice Winslow and Hassan Whiteside and guys like that to be leaders.
Yeah, I don't know if they want the leadership, because they wouldn't have gotten Rondo and, you know, the whole Jimmy Butler trade thing was kind of a debacle and a sort of like a PR mess for them.
Yeah, my issue with that is just like I talked about with John Wall and Bradley Beal, where when you go out there and you say it's not about the money, it is about the money. Whereas when people go out and say, well, no, it's not my team, it's Jimmy Butler's team, and Rondo's like, no, he's right. Whenever you say that, that means that it's not his team, or you think it's your team. There's always ulterior motives there when they go out of their way and say, and maybe it is genuine. Maybe they do want to defer to Jimmy Butler as a star player, which he should be. But I think there's a little part of them say, yeah, but this is my corner too.
Yeah, we kind of a little buyer's remorse, and we gave him the max, super max, and you know, well, he's not on the trading block, but we'll answer your call. And it's sort of like, if you're going to do a rebuild and you know you want Chris Dunn, and just go for it. Don't do this half-assed sort of patchwork, which is really the definition of what they did. You like Doug McDermott? Well, he's now not going to get playing time behind Wade or Butler. We said Mirotić disappeared last year in Hoiberg's system.
Yeah, he played okay for Spain in the Olympics, but that's Euroball. That's very
good.
He
completely regressed like anywhere. Like I said, Robin Lopez, they got lucky in getting him for Derrick Rose.
Yeah, we're going to talk about the Knicks later, but the Knicks may have made a calculated mistake trading away a contract like Lopez's for even at $13 million, I think a bad move. You know, you don't trade a defensive center at less than $15 million a year.
You know, this team, who is going to shoot on this team? Rondo, Wade, and that where is the three-pointers going to come from on this? This is going to be an ugly, ugly team.
Is this Taj Gibson's last year in Chicago?
Yeah.
Okay. Assist-wise, they were 11th. You got to imagine with Rondo being there, being as prolific as he is with the assist, that that'll probably go up. Points-wise, offensively, just dreadful. 26th in efficiency, 20th in points. I don't even know if that's actually going to get better, to be honest, Adam, because, you know, with Wade as the leader in Miami, they weren't a great offense either. They weren't a great three-point shooting team either, you know, and that's the one thing that kind of made me scratch my head with Chicago's moves is that they don't play to Fred Hoiberg's strengths when he coached at Iowa State. You know, he liked to move the ball. They like to run. Rondo likes to run, but I don't know if they're going to follow his lead. And they're not going to shoot a lot of threes. They're not going to attack the basket as much, you know, unless Wade and Butler just find really good rapport together and they're able to just get to the free throw line at, like, you know, 10 free throws a game apiece, you know, which I don't think is going to happen.
Oh, all it's going to be every game is just they're just going to play 5 feet off of Wade and Rondo and just be like, okay, beat us by the three. We'll give
who's
it to
the
you
ball,
all night.
Who's the ball handler? Who's the clock bleeder, you know, on the possession? And and they're going to zone out. And they're going to say, okay, we're going to double him because they're obviously trying to run like a screen for him. And the only way they can get beat that way is if they give up offensive rebounds to Wade and Rondo, who's a good rebounding guard, of course, because of how long his arms and how big his hands are. But, you know, you wonder about Rondo because of how much history he's had with being sort of a poison pill.
Yeah, and that's, like we said, just patchwork. Like, you have, like, how would this team be different if you got rid of Butler and, you know, you got Chris Dunn? You would have Dunn, Valentine, McDermott, and Portis as sort of your core. That's not a bad way to start.
What you thought of Denzel Valentine? He played well in the Summer League. They won the Summer League championship for whatever it's worth, which is nothing. But do you think that Valentine can be a dependable backup point guard?
He's not a point guard at all.
They brought in Jerian Grant in that trade with the Knicks, but I don't know if
you liked him coming out of school and then you quickly did an about face.
I kind of like him, but I'm not like super high on him, but he's got value. You know, he might not have been a first round pick level guy, but you know, who has, you know, like sometimes you miss out on guys like that. They bring in Isaiah Cannon, who's a decent 3-point shooter. Tony Snell at small forward. He might be gone. You know what I'm saying?
He wasn't that good to begin with. And just, you know, this is how you want to sort of start Jimmy Butler's peak performance by patchworking Wayne and Rondo.
Let me give you some coulda, woulda, shouldas. Could they? I think you already answered the question. Could they have done a better job in the offseason than just going with Wade and Rondo? And you think yes?
They could have, but they also got lucky with Lopez. I think if they got done, who knows if the Knicks would have done their trade if. You know, it's just a lot of, like, the dominoes would have fallen way differently.
Should they have been able to beat Cleveland when Thibodeau was still there?
Yeah, but they didn't.
Okay, so do you honestly feel like that Chicago was a better team than Cleveland?
They were a better team than Cleveland. Cleveland just had the star.
Yeah, they had the one guy that could bail them out. Mm-hmm. They had 42 wins. I think they'll do better than that. That I can absolutely predict. I don't think they're going to be less than 42.
Yeah, but they're not going to be good. No one's going to be like, oh, man, they're going to be, you know, they're a 52-win team. They're challenging. They could give a run for anybody. It's just,
But do you think they might have a little bit of that, that the predictors are that finally have that mindset of, like, the Lakers in 2013 and – I'm trying to think of another decent example, maybe the Houston Rockets, where you can't just go by the names and say, oh, yeah, of course they're going to be good. Like, is it still in the back of your mind where people are saying, yeah, the Bulls are going to be pretty good, but I don't, you know, but we need to keep a level head about this is what I'm saying.
It's just sort of, I think we got to get big names to appease the media because our media is ruthless. Whereas okay. if this team was, let's say, in Indiana – it would be just a lot of mediocrity and who cares. And
it's like the least ruthless media of all time. But yeah,
speaking of mediocrity in Indiana.
Yeah, great segue. Let's talk about the Indiana Pacers. They have a new head coach. It's Nate McMillan. What you thought about that one replacing
Mediocre.
Frank Vogel?
Mediocre. Vogel, I, you know, it's just, well, I'm tired of Vogel. Let's let's put his assistant in. Nothing's going to change. We just have a different, you know, different coachy answer to. The systems are going to be the same. And, you know, we need to upgrade, you know, our point guard, George Hill's mediocre. Well, let's get Jeff Teague in. And, well, he.
This was very NBA Jam-ish, where they just went with Nate guys who averaged a lot of points. It's not necessarily guys that, you know, remember how in NBA Jam they would just pick the two leading scorers, even though the second guy was probably not that good. It was just that he was the leading scorer. You know, that's kind of like what the Pacers did. Hey, Thaddeus Young, he gets 15-8. Let's bring him in. Oh, Jeff Teague, he's like, you know, he was the Eastern Conference co-player of the month one time, whatever the hell that thing was when the Hawks won the Eastern Conference player of the month as a team, which is ridiculous. Like, but no, the idea is like, oh, well, Jeff Teague's pretty good. He was an All-Star one time. Let's bring him in. Oh, Monte Ellis, you know, and then Al Jefferson. Oh, you know, he was a double-double guy before. Let's bring him. It feels like they were just looking at the stats and saying, hey, can this guy work? Yeah, just sign him.
Well, yeah. we need upgrades, but we don't want to make home runs. So let's just try to hit singles and upgrade, you know, smallly, which is really what it is. Upgrade.
Did the Pacers upgrade? That's the problem.
Yeah, they upgraded.
Yeah, but are they better?
No, they're not. They're going to be, you know, a 5 seed, and they're not going to be. The funny thing about this is Paul George is a power forward. He totally is. Well, we'll get Thaddeus Young, so that.
That's over.
Squashes that. He's a 4 talk, which was funny because I think that's where sort of the division started last year between Bird and Vogel.
Miles Turner's now going to be relied on a lot more now that Mahimi's out of the picture. We already know the history with Al Jefferson, whether it be drug suspensions, injuries. You can't rely on him for every game. So Turner is going to be relied on pretty heavily. Had a very good rookie year, even though it wasn't like he was Karl Anthony Towns, but he averaged like 1.4 blocks per game.
It was better than anybody expected. He was expected to be a long-term project, and he started out decent. Al Jefferson, good as a backup. He's not going to give you 35 minutes anymore, not with his mileage.
Good score, though.
You know, Thaddeus Young, solid upgrade over what did they really, you know, who was there before?
Solomon Hill was kind of like a more of a 3-ish guy. That was like a small ball.
Oh, yeah, he was a 3, but George was a 4. So, okay, George,
they had,
you know,
Jordan Hill, but that was more of that Frank Vogel big-to-big, like two-big lineup, you know, where they have a Jordan Hill.
Yeah,
and
Teague is better than George, but, you know, Monta Ellis, he's declining, and he's just a shooter, and he's not shooting well anymore. Rodney Stuckey has overstayed his welcome a couple years ago now, and, you know, Aaron Brooks, as you know, as a backup, well, he's, you know, he'll stay healthy and he'll give you minutes if you need to, but it's just, you're not going to get, this team is just like, they're built to be a 5 seed.
All right. Would this team have been better had they just kept Vogel but made the same changes? Or does it not fit with the the stoic way that Vogel likes to
I don't think defense? Vogel would have gone for it. That's probably why.
Okay. So it's more one of these, well, I can't do this because this is not the way that I would run.
These are not my guys. This is not my system. I have my system. I like my guys. Whereas McMillan's like, I'm a many time retread. I don't care. I'll do things out of anybody.
Okay. What should they have done to try to appease Paul George? Was it something like this, or did they have to do a little bit more to build around him? Because I don't feel like they're building around him. I feel like they're just trying to put names there where it's like, you see, we got Thaddeus Young. We got Jeff.
I don't know whether it's appeasing him as opposed to, look, we're not taking steps back. Okay. You know, Jeff Teague, he's better than the guy, you know, these guys are better than the ones who left. They're not home runs. They're not splashy names. It's going to, you know, we'd have to severely overpay to bring a splashier name here. So let's just quietly upgrade a little bit.
Yeah, their cap space is kind of, here's the problem. Whatever cap space they have, Paul George is going to eat it in about a year or two, correct? He's got the player option in 2018. He's going to opt out. He's going to get supermax. I mean, Paul George is one of those transcendent players. You can't let him walk away. So, you know, you're going to wind up building the team around him anyway. I just hope they're not doing something that might harm the potential of keeping Paul George, because they're going to have guys that are going to be good for this one season, and then the following season it goes rot.
Yeah, but you know, like I said, that's a couple years from now. This year, you're relying a lot on Miles Turner to make a huge leap, and then you're relying on Monta Ellis to not further degrade.
Jeff Teague's extension. What should he get?
I don't even know
if they've come to the terms. Am I correct?
With new money, I've been like, I don't even know who.
Because
you know,
the rumor was that after the trade on the draft day that they were supposed to sign him like right after, but that the deal didn't. But for some reason, they haven't struck the deal yet. I'm not sure. There was some CBA reasons because the trade had been delayed because of different contingencies. But I thought that deal would have already been done. But for some reason, they've kind of held off on it. I think that Teague's going to get about $17 million a year at least.
And that's the thing. It's like, well, that's super overpaid, but it's like, well, nowadays.
Well, Ryan Anderson's making $20 million a year. Yeah, you know, he might even get 20. Who knows?
You know? It's just the team is just they're completely unexciting.
Yeah, and the thing is, Vogel liked to build teams with like a Solomon Hill and a Lance Stephenson and a Lavoy Allen, where he can rely on guys that either never got injured or they knew their part on the team. They knew how to play their part, you know, whereas now I feel like they've got guys that are just like, well, I know what I can do, you know, so I kind of worry about McMillan being able to balance out some of the instability that is there with the roster changeover. I still think they're going to be better than 45 and 37, even though it is a little risky to say that.
Well, here's the thing with them is they don't have a high ceiling. It's just like, this team, you could look at them and be like, yeah, I know what they're going to give me.
Can they beat Cleveland?
There's no surprises with this team. Nobody's like, maybe they could pull this out.
They almost beat Toronto with that other lineup when Vogel was there.
Yeah, they almost beat Toronto, but that was Toronto's, you know, we've never been in this position. We don't know what to do and just, you know, bad coaching of, okay, dribble out the clock and then take a 25-foot off, you know, off-balance shot. What could go wrong with that?
The one thing with Larry Bird is that he wanted to push offense. They were 25th in efficiency and 18th in points per game last year. Do you think that's going to improve, and if so, by how much?
I don't. Not with you know, Monta Ellis being
Monte.
Monte
has like it all.
You don't see many things changing. It's just like, well, they were 22nd in this, and they were 10th in this. Well, okay, they might move up to 20th and
8th. Yeah, three-pointers aren't going to get any better to me. Jeff Teague is not exactly the greatest three-point shooter, you know, so I'm not sure.
Yeah, it's just, like I said, this team has no surprises.
Okay, and now let's talk about a team that made some surprises in free agency by being actually aggressive, because we're so used to the idea of the Memphis Grizzlies being kind of dormant. I mean, kind of like a grizzly. Is a grizzly bear dormant? Do they just kind of like lie?
They hibernate in the winter.
Yeah, but you know, but what do they do in the summer? They're
out
fish.
And about. They're doing their thing.
Well, that's the thing with the Memphis Grizzlies. Like, you're so used to them kind of like not doing anything in the summer. You know, they'll be aggressive with re-signing their own talent. Guys like Zach Randolph a couple years ago. Then it was Marc Gasol getting max. And you weren't sure with the Memphis Grizzlies this year. They had that infirmary unit that was the Memphis Grizzlies in the playoffs when the Spurs swept them, because they had so many injuries to guys like Mike Conley and Tony Allen and Marc Gasol.
Everybody. Like, if you were on a Memphis roster, you were injured at some point.
they had Xavier Munford, Briante Weber, I think, who was on that team before he wound up on the playoff roster for the Heat at the very end. They were literally picking people up for 10-day contracts while they were fighting for a freaking playoff spot, and somehow they got the playoff spot. A lot of guys that they relied on that makeshift roster, guys like Matt Barnes, Lance Stephenson, Mario Chalmers before he tore his Achilles, those guys are gone now. And so the only ones that you're really keeping on the roster that I know of are Vince Carter, Brandon Wright, Tony Allen's in his last year, Zach Randolph's in his last year, Marc Gasol's going to be coming back. So there's a little bit of stability, but there is a lot. What surprised me with the Grizzlies, I thought, okay, well, they're just going to be the same dormant franchise, and they're going to let these other teams pick apart their talent. Well, they did the opposite with Robert Parra, the owner. They went after talent. So, but what did you think of who they pursued?
They panicked.
Okay.
They looked at their roster – Connolly, unrestricted free agent. Well, if he leaves, who do we have backing him up? Well, shit, we got nobody. Mm-hmm. Chandler Parsons, we need to give him a max deal because all we have is 52-year-old Vince Carter. And we still have, you know, 48.
They tried to get Eric Gordon.
You know, 48-year-old Tony Allen and Zach Randolph. How many years does he have left? They just have a very old roster. And I think they said, if we lose Connolly, we have to blow up this team. And if we have to blow up this team, we will be on the Brooklyn level of having no talent.
Should they have signed? There's the should there. Should they have signed Mike Conley to that max deal? The 30 max.
I think they had no choice.
But
is,
man,
he
is
worth
Mike
it? No.
Here's my problem with that. A 30 guy, which means like your max level after your 7% increase by the last part of your max deal is $30 million a year. Those are superstars. Those are guys that can get you
that. Yep, there are superstars, but I mean, if you're giving a max deal to Harrison Barnes, if you're Evan Turner getting $70 million, it's one of those things like, well, shit. Everybody's...
I cannot explain Evan Turner. We'll get to Portland another day.
Timofey Mozgov got $60 million. If these players are getting all this money, you sort of have no choice because there was going to be some team that said, I got nothing to lose. I'm just going to give him the $30 million deal.
He's a terrific player. You know, 15 points, three rebounds. He's not a rebounding guard because of his height. 6 assists, though. He's definitely like a steady guy. I know he had the Achilles injury, but overall, he usually never gets hurt. Now here's the problem. They built on the grit and grind with Marc Gasol and Zach Randolph, inside-out ball, a lot of rebounding. They pride themselves on the rebounding for the most part, even though their team rebounding is bad. But defensively, they stay solid. They don't turn the ball over a lot. By the nature of the re-signing and the aggressiveness of re-signing him, is it now Mike Conley's team?
Yeah, it has to be his team, him and Parsons. Mm-hmm. He was the one, you know, Parsons got there, so that made Conley re-sign. It has to be this transition from that Zach Randolph grind it down, you know. That's why 6 assists, that's huge on this old team who scored 70 points a game.
Yeah, because the ball movement is not exactly one to be desired. Yeah. Now, they also brought in a new coach, another Dave, because Dave Joerger has now been let go, which we had heard rumors about that Robert Pair was not exactly fond of Dave Joerger. But now he's gone. They bring in a new guy, Dave Fizdale, who had been a longtime assistant under Eric Spoelstra of Miami. Anybody who watched Miami, they know him as the assistant coach that's got the goatee and the glasses with the bald head. So now he is going to be the head coach there with Memphis. Do you think there's going to be any change, or is it going to be more of the same?
I think there's going to be change. It's one of those good moves that they didn't go for this retread of, you know, nothing against Nate McMillan, but, oh, well, he's coached at 3 places. This time will be different because he's shown us so much change, you know, his second and third stop he was at. But no, this time, well, he'll be good. I'm like, well, what's Mo Cheeks doing? How come we haven't, you
yeah.
know, dug
Why
him
is he
up?
Back in Oklahoma City. Yeah, exactly.
You know, it's good to give a fresh face to everything. It's just, you know, like we mentioned, by we don't know how they may, you know, stay in the playoff hunt with literally having nobody on the roster. And, you know, they drafted Deion Davis, who really sort of fell to them in the second round.
He is the most expensive signing for a second round pick ever in the NBA. So they like him a lot. They value him as a first rounder.
They like him, and he'll be, you know, the Zach Randolph's replacement in 2 years. It's just, like I said, you have this super old roster. Like, what, you know, Tony Allen, Vince Carter.
Is this Carter's last year in the NBA?
Yeah.
I think he'll be 40 by then. I will say this for Chandler Parsons. I think he's a very good fit here. Like, I know a lot of people look at Parsons' game and the injury history, and they say, well, he's a small forward, but he's not very strong, and he's, you know, he shoots a lot of threes, and defensively he's not always there. And so people kind of wondered about how he fits on the Grizzlies team. I actually think at the 3, it actually works really well for them.
Well, A, he had health problems, and B, he wasn't a fit in Dallas. He was supposed
to be – He was a bad fit. That's true.
He was supposed to be that piece. He was supposed to be that number three of the big three, and then he just became a complimentary part. Like, he was, oh, he's decent, but he never really fit there, and I think that's sort of where I'm judging him in Memphis. But then again, Memphis never did anything. They never moved the ball. They never did, so this might open it up, and it might help Mike Conley more.
That's a really good point. Now, I'm not saying the money influences it, but in the hierarchy of the locker room, you got to think that maybe Conley's thinking, okay, I'm going to get mine now. I got to be a star. So now Conley's numbers will probably go up. Parsons, offensively, he can fill the cup. He always did. That's what his appeal is. That's why he gets paid. So I feel like offensively, this team will take a jump. Defensively, I think they're going to be about the same. I don't think they're going to play as slow as they did at 27th in pace, but I think they'll pick things up a bit. But I don't think they're just going to suddenly start heaving up threes.
No, they're not, but they're going to be a little fast. It's not going to be the same Memphis, but you're going to have to slowly transition out of that.
Because
these guys aren't
eating grizzly. It's more like summertime eating fish grizzly.
Yeah, it's – and just, you know, you have – you know, one of their big signings last year was Brandon Wright, who – got injured super early. He's not good, but as a backup, he has a friendly contract. He's decent.
Yeah, you got Jarrell Martin and you got Jamichael Green. Your backup for Parsons is James Ennis. And then they brought in a three-point shooter in Troy Daniels, so at least they diagnosed one of their problems from the good. Usually with their signings, they would not even think, okay, we know we're terrible at threes, so we're not going to sign any three-point specialists. Well, at least they signed one. You know,
well, usually it'd be, oh, we got money. Chandler Parsons, nah. We need let's go in for Whiteside.
Yeah,
we need more defense. And yeah. You know, it's a slow move, a slow change. And like I said, they're only at this high up because they defied logic last year. They somehow managed to be in the playoffs with literally D League players.
So we feel good about this team. It's not one of these things where, you know, for coulda, woulda, shoulda that they. You know, they should – I feel like they should be here. You know, like yeah. It's not this like, is... well, they could have been better or they would have been better. Like, this is where they are. And this is – and I feel like they're in their comfort zone here, you know. And who knows? Maybe in the second round of the playoffs, they'll pop a team in games one or two. And exactly. All of a sudden you're thinking, okay, this team's dangerous. Are you ready to talk about the New York Knicks?
This is the one I believe
this is
you
the
put them
ultimate coulda woulda shoulda, where teams they talk their way. It's almost like, what team do you feel has a little more toxicity to it, the Chicago situation or the New York situation?
No, it's completely the Bulls try to tear down that team and oh you ain't so good. Whereas the Knicks are like, no man, we're a championship caliber team. Even when they're a horrible last year, now we can make the playoffs.
Yeah.
They always think they're better than they really are, whereas Chicago's trying to be like, Chicago's just like a bunch of haters, whereas New York's just delusional.
Yeah. I mean, it's worse to be delusional than to be a hater. Because if you're a hater, if you get proven wrong, at least you can turn it around. Whereas when you're delusional, you never get out of the delusion. You always think you're good.
They have literally just said, we want to be decent for 2 years.
You know what doomed them? That 2013 year where Carmelo had the MVP season. That ruined the Knicks. Because it gave them that false sense of security of, oh, yeah, we can be good again. And then when things went terrible and went sour, it was like, well, we need to figure out a way to get back to where we were. It's like, what are you fucking talking about, back to where you were? You are back to where you were. You were
back
bad.
To where you were in the 80s.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, this is – they have just done patchwork. Derrick Rose, he'll be here for 1 year. He's not going to
– You don't think he'll re-sign even for less?
He'll re-sign for less, but – The worst thing that happens if he has a good deal and they overpay him, it's just Noah, Anthony, and Courtney Lee are on the wrong side of 30, and they're all on borrowed time. Porzingis, they think he's going to be an MVP. They are talking to him like he's going to be an MVP, and he really needs to be. Whereas if you watched him, wasn't he just sort of average the second half of the season?
Well, he had some injuries with his legs. And he kind of slowed down a little bit, but he had that hot start to the rookie year. But the thing is, you got a 21-year-old guy from Latvia who's got a lot of potential like Porzingis does. I mean, you could do a lot of stuff with him at the five, which is what makes him so attractive. So now you can have Noah play decent minutes. Not exactly. I mean, I know he's making $17 million a year through 2020, but you don't have to just run him ragged his first year. You know, you can play Porzingis a lot and have Noah be just the defensive center.
Okay.
Here's what I don't understand. You had a defensive center, Robin Lopez. Why did you get Joakim Noah? You know?
Exactly. You know, he's an upgrade. He's better. He would just, you know, he was injured last year and the system became toxic. But here's the question. Okay, you put Porzingis at the five. Who comes in off this bench?
Off the bench? Well, you got Willie Hernan Gomez, but we don't know what he's made of.
We don't know what he can do.
Lance Thomas is a small five, usually a four.
Mindrugas Kaminskis, I know nothing of.
Yeah.
Justin Holiday isn't going to give you anything.
Even though he got starters minutes over Tony Snell at the end. But that's Tony Snell.
And you have Brandon Jennings and Sasa Vujacic.
What I liked about Jennings is that they got him for basically nothing. They got him for five.
They got him on the Derek Williams, just 1 year. Mm-hmm.
So if Derek Rose kind of goes sideways, you still got Brandon Jennings, which actually kind of works for them.
But that's the thing is you play small, move Porzingis to five. You don't have any bench. The thing we said about last year was, oh man, they have a solid bench team with Aflalo and Lopez. Oh, once you start getting big names in, you can have Robin Lopez be your six man big man. You can have Aflalo be your six man guard. And just, well, let's just gut that to get Derrick Rose.
Okay. How many games should the New York Knicks win?
I don't. They should.
They had 32 wins last year, 50 losses. I mean, they'll do better than that, but I can't flip that number. I can't say 50 and 32.
I'll say, 42 and 40.
Yeah, that's 50 and 32 out of 32 and 50 is a dramatic turnaround. That means that Phil Jackson hit the mark on almost every deal except for maybe one.
Oh, hit the mark. Derrick Rose's MVP. Noah found the fountain of youth. It's just, I don't. You know, that's requiring a lot of these old players to stay healthy and not only be healthy, but fire on all cylinders.
Okay.
With a coach, you're just like, the guys we wanted didn't want to come here, so.
Okay, let's flip back to 2014. Should they have just let Carmelo Anthony walk away in free agency, or did they still need him? Because without Carmelo, you probably don't get Rose and Noah, but you got the appeal.
You don't have Melo. You could have signed somebody last year. You could have been, with Melo, that killed their cap. You know, it didn't kill
their
cap.
The remaining part of the Derrick Rose deal killed their cap at least this season. They'll be okay next season, but the Noah contract doesn't help them much.
It was one of those, he said, I want the more money as opposed to winning.
They have a new coach too, Jeff Hornacek. Hornacek got a bad rap in Phoenix, but what can he do here? Because there's all that triangle stuff of will Phil want him to run in. I think that's gone by the wayside. I think Hornacek's going to run a lot of guard stuff. But now you got Derrick Rose is 27, but he feels like he's 37. You know,
he's 27, but those legs are 37.
Uh-huh.
And that's the thing. It's just it's sad that injury sort of killed his career, but. And then, this will be, he's going to come back. He's going to be an MVP. This is his year again. It's
is that
just
a
like,
New York accent?
Yeah, it's, I don't. The Knicks fans are just extremely high on everybody on this team, whereas you're like, nope, this is where they should be. I think they should have been one tier down, but you're like, nope, this should be where they should be.
Willie Hernan Gomez looked good for Spain. Do you think he'll be better than his brother Juan? This is his first year as well.
That's the thing, is they're both two completely different players.
Yeah, one's a big.
One's a stretch four, one's just a pure big. And I don't, Hernan Gomez with Porzingis, and it's just.
Do you think we'll have any of that New York vibe, overhype of, oh, his name is Willie, and he has two good games, and people like him all of a sudden?
As opposed to Linsanity, let's make t-shirts and everything.
Big Willie style, I guess. That very 90s-ish.
This team is, like I said, 3 years down the line, they're kind of screwed, but Now is you have to squeeze out you need everything to every number to hit on the roulette wheel, every blackjack deal to be a 21 in order for this team to be a contender.
I just don't like the idea that you try to assimilate different portions of talent for different categories and you just automatically think, oh well, we got young Porzingis, we have a maxed out Carmelo Anthony. Of course they're all gonna fit together. Well, not necessarily. You know, I worry about how it might screw up Porzingis because you're messing around with Noah there at the five. How good could Porzingis be career wise? Like, where would his max be? All star?
Well, obviously his max is all star. The New York fans, he's already won, but
I wouldn't go that far.
Some people are very delusional. Like, this will be his. He's gonna be the all star this year.
But I mean, I would say playoffs for sure.
Yeah, that's why they're here. This is, like we said, this is a solid 5-6 seed, and like, I'll defer to the hype just a bit. I don't want to be hating on them like I always do.
Okay, and so we're going to wrap things up here, and we'll start this time with the rankings, and we're going from 13 to 9, right? Mm-hmm. We got only 8 teams left. That's unbelievable. Let's start with you at number 13. Who do you have?
Knicks.
Wow.
I don't even need to think about who else on this list. They're the ones who sort of jumped in here by hype. Mm-hmm. You know, going from just completely, you know, not a playoff team to, oh yeah, they're going to be a 6th seed. That's just hype right now, and that's why I have them at the bottom.
I got the Pacers. I think that McMillan new personnel thing is gonna clash for the first couple of months, and it's gonna kind of straddle their record. Who do you have at 12?
I have probably the Pacers.
Okay, I'd say the Knicks. So we're switching here.
Memphis is just above them.
I would probably say Chicago at 11. I'm not so sure about the Chicago Bulls. I actually have the Grizzlies at 9. I actually have them.
Okay,
at the top.
So we flip-flop the Bulls and the Grizzlies, which, yeah,
so
that's
you're high,
sort of.
So you got the Bulls at the top of this crop.
I have Atlanta.
You have Atlanta at the top of the crop. No, I have the Bulls at 9. I have the Bulls.
Oh, I have Atlanta above the Bulls.
Okay. Why do you like the Hawks more than the Bulls? A little more consistency?
The Bulls are just, they did not do well this year, and I think just putting extra Band-Aid pieces on it aren't going to change it. Mm-hmm. I just don't, they're big names. They're going to do it. Atlanta is on their way down, but I think how people undervalue Howard because of his, like I said, his personality.
Okay, so for you, I'm trying to remember this. So for 13, you got the Knicks. At 12, you got the Pacers. At 11, you have the Grizzlies, right?
Or the I have the Grizzlies, and then 10
Charlotte,
the Bulls, then
Atlanta. For me, I've got the Pacers. I've got the Knicks. At number 11, I think I said the Grizzlies. And at 10, I have the Hawks. And at 9, I have the Bulls.
I could flip flop them too. That's the
it's
Atlanta,
very I've... close. That's why this is kind of the most debated one, because this is, you know, I know they're different types of teams, but you're almost like it's almost apples and oranges.
Like, yeah, and then like the thing is that, well, is Chicago better than Houston? Yeah. Mm-hmm. Is Atlanta better than Dallas? Yeah, that's why they're above this tier.
I agree with that. Like, I think that the teams are for coulda, woulda, shoulda, except for maybe like Washington and Utah, I feel like they're all these teams that were just talked about are better than those teams.
Like we said, Washington, you know, the top of that group, the Knicks in this one, is there really much of a difference? No, not. They're sort of close. Pacers, Washington, yeah, they all hover in that same area. Like, you know, literally where, you know, you see one game separating three teams. Here we go.
And so for slippage, who do you see here? Who's the most likely to fall? Since you had in the bottom there, you had the Knicks. You would say the Knicks?
I would say Memphis is the quickest for slippage because...
What if it doesn't work with Conley trying to be the defensive guy?
They didn't work with Conley, and we mentioned Utah. We mentioned Minnesota. Those are two teams, you know, you pretend to be high on New Orleans every one... couple days. Mm-hmm. Houston, you have those teams out the west, whereas we just have, you know, in the East, New York, well, they have to play Philly four times. They have to play Brooklyn four times.
For me, the Bulls might be a total disaster. I know I had them ranked the highest, but they also have the biggest risk factor. Like we just talked about, the toxicity. Like, I think that could be a problem. In terms of the team that I think will definitely rise up, I think Atlanta will.
I don't see any team on this list rising.
Like, I think Atlanta could break the glass ceiling on the next class, which has five teams. You know, but
the thing is, like, you think of the teams who are left. It's like, can Atlanta really take out an Oklahoma City who we haven't mentioned? Can they take out a Boston who
maybe
we haven't mentioned?
Maybe the 2017 Oklahoma City thought
that. That's why it's just like there's that, you know, I don't see a team like, oh, man, they couldn't like be the Portland and jump up two groups out of nowhere.
Yeah, because if you do process of elimination, if you've been following the show, you kind of get an idea of what we have remaining, because we have a lot. We've reviewed a lot more teams than we have left. So, like, let's just give this one away. Like, Boston Celtics. If they played the Atlanta Hawks right now, who would win?
I think Boston should win.
Homer.
Boston should win easily, you know, given between, like we said, Oklahoma City and Memphis. Oklahoma City should win easily.
If Chicago played Toronto, I'd take Toronto, you know?
That's why these who can – in order for a team to sort of jump up, you need to sort of look ahead and be like, well, who could sort of fall down? And I think this is sort of their – like – you know, like Indiana, they're built to be at this tier at the top.
Is there anything to kind of take away from the fact that we had four teams in the East on this section and one in the West? Or does it not matter because God of Pulse, which had the six teams, had three in the West and three in the East?
No, that's just the way things sort of fall down and teams, you know, they don't develop evenly. It can't be like, okay, well, we're in the bottom of the East, so, well, we should have a bottom of the West. No, it's not like you're not picking who's the eight seed for each team. It's just this group.
Yeah.
We're all picking all 30 teams.
Where are they going? You know?
Yeah, we're not doing East. If this was just East versus West, our rankings would be completely different because you're taking out half the teams. And, you know, a lot of these teams in the East are there because I said, again, they get to play Philly and Brooklyn four times, whereas the West only plays them twice.
Okay, and that's gonna be wrapping up this episode. We're gonna have five teams on next one. Are you looking for this one? I'm really looking forward to, because we started this show when Rondo was still with the Boston Celtics. Are you like a proud daddy watching Brad Stevens' Boston Celtics team kind of steadily rise?
I just remember Brad Stevens just being like the mediocre of mediocre coaches. He didn't do one thing good at all. Then all of a sudden, just this wunderkind out of nowhere.
Which team are you looking forward to next week?
Why can't we just be happy with the teams we have this week?
Because these teams are over. We have to talk about the next ones.
Well, let's just enjoy what we have. Let's enjoy these 22 teams we've done already.
Mm-hmm. But any MVP candidates on this section here? Coulda, woulda, shoulda? That we just talked about? Dwayne Wade carrying the way. You know, Dwight Howard kind of rekindling his center dominance.
Howard will have to rekindle to be the big man of the year.
Paul George, scoring-wise, going to 26 points a game, maybe? 27?
The thing is, you know, again, you have New York and Indiana hoping two guys make huge leaps in their second year. Memphis hoping the door hasn't shut on their old men, and Chicago just hoping that big names will bring big talent.
Yeah. So, I mean, a lot of real, like, fluidity there in this section. But that's why they're here. They could have been better. They would have been – they should have been worse, and they made a move that got them better. And, you know, they're just – it's almost like you're hanging on. You know, you're in purgatory, but you're just kind of hanging in there. Because, you know, one bad move, one bad break, and you could just tumble out of this one. You know.
You could tell, but the thing is, like, you fall. Oh, well, now you fall to an 8 seed.
Yeah.
Whereas, you know, that's the purgatory. It's like, well, you've peaked at a 4, but you've bottomed out at 8. You're going to be the playoff team, but you're just not going to. We don't expect you past the second round ever.
Yeah. And that's going to be wrapping up this episode. We're going to be coming back next week. We're almost at the end. It's kind of exciting, actually. But on behalf of Adam Murray, this is Andrew Reach. Take care, guys. See you next week.